We are back now to continue with our series Around the Horn with UBS Asset Management's Fixed Income Team. On a monthly basis, we are joined by top portfolio managers and business heads from Asset Management's Muni, Taxable, Fixed Income, and Liquidity teams. We do hear candidly from them on their views on the markets and what they believe you should be focused on within the fixed income space. So joining us for this month, glad to welcome Steve Cather, a member of the Fixed Income SMA Advisory Group. Steve will also serve as our moderator for this month's segment. We also have with us Dave Walczak and Dave Rothweiler, senior portfolio managers for short duration and liquidity strategies, Dave Ignolo, head of U.S. corporate fixed income strategies, Anders Nelson, portfolio manager for U.S. high yield corporate fixed income, David Michael, portfolio manager for emerging markets, as well as Chuck Grande, head of the municipal investment team and senior municipal portfolio manager. So with that, Steve, I'll pass it over to you to lead today's conversation. Welcome.
Thank you, Dan, and welcome everybody to this month's Around the Horn. There's certainly a lot of ground to cover since our last call, and we only have so much time, so why don't we just get right into it? To me, it feels like every few months, the U.S.'s running out of steam narrative seems to resurface. It occurred in March/April of 2023, then in November, December, and then again in May of this year. And yet the underlying health of the U.S. household remains fairly healthy. Case in point, last Friday we got the May employment report, which confirmed labor market strength, and it challenged the emerging narrative of a weakening U.S. economy. We saw a big beat across the board with the U.S. economy adding 272,000 new jobs in May, with only a modest downward revision of 15,000 jobs over the prior 2 months. Keep in mind the consensus call was for 180,000 new jobs. There were some soft patches, though. The unemployment rate ticked up to about 4% versus a consensus expectation for a steady reading of 3.9. And average hourly earnings were up 0.4% month over month versus a 0.2% monthly increase consensus call. What about inflation? Well, we saw this morning's inflation print, and in my opinion, it didn't provide much room for the Fed to be dovish when they released their June policy decision shortly after the conclusion of this call. For those who weren't watching, May's core CPI came in at 2.2% versus consensus estimate of 0.3%, which corresponds to a year-over-year rate of 3.4%. Clearly, it's a good sign that the pace of inflation is slowing, given we started the year at 4%, but we're still far from seeing an inflation rate sustainably and convincingly moving towards the Fed's 2% target. Given stubbornly high inflation, a healthy employment picture, and strong economic activity, it's no wonder why Fed policy has remained restrictive and Treasury rates have been volatile. Treasury rate volatility has kept rate-sensitive credit returns in check since the start of the year, and in all likelihood, the median dot is likely to show later today only one cut should be expected in 2024, down from three cuts originally communicated. Future rate cuts are linked to inflation progress, and in my opinion, we aren't there yet, which is why we continue to see some clients maintain front-end exposure, while others are gradually adding duration to their portfolios. Enough from me. I think it's time to hear from our panel of experts, and I'd like to start with David Walczak. Over to you, my friend.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Steve. So I guess just kind of recapping some of our thoughts here on the front end. I think you did a good job kind of covering the inflation data this morning. Just a few other items I'd like to point out with regards to that. So I think notably for the Fed, we did see super core CPI or core services, excluding housing. It actually printed slightly negative, down about 4 basis points month over month after increasing 42 bips last month, and now sits at a pace of up about 4.8% on a year-over-year basis. So clearly that was good news, but I think as we've heard from Fed officials in recent months, they really need to see kind of continued evidence and more durable progress on the inflation front. So certainly some of this cooling that we saw with the most recent report I think is welcome, but again, I think they need to see that over a string of several months here. So where does that leave us in terms of what we're seeing with Fed funds futures? We're now seeing after the data this morning about 50 basis points worth of cuts now by the end of the year. September, the probabilities are inching up there, and we now see about 20 basis points worth of cuts. And then cumulatively through November, there's actually 31 basis points currently priced in. So definitely, you know, a reaction there in terms of Fed funds futures in the back of the inflation data this morning. You know, as we sit here right now, about 25 minutes before the Fed meeting, you know, we're going to be obviously watching for any changes to the FOMC statement. We will get an updated dot plot, as you mentioned, and then, of course, Powell's press conference as well. You know, the last dot plot after the March meeting showed a median of 3 cuts expected. However, it only would require 1 dot moving higher by 25 basis points to only reflect 2 cuts. So, you know, I think we wouldn't be surprised to see at least only 2 cuts now priced in for the median for this year. And then just generally some upper bias to the dots across the board. You know, as I mentioned, you know, Chair Powell will likely continue to stress that independence and patience with cuts. But we'll be looking to see if you know, provides any, you know, different clarity in terms of their view on the economy. Looking at where we're at from a rate standpoint here in the front end, just looking at treasuries, you know, we continue to see front end treasury bills north of 5%. You know, the 3-month bill is currently at a 5.38, the 6-month at a 5.32, and the 1-year bill is at a 5.14. So still, as I mentioned, you know, yields consistently above 5%. You know, looking at just industry-wide money market fund AUM, you know, we did see it increase once again last week to just under $6.1 trillion. And industry-wide, you know, money market fund assets are up just under $125 billion since the local low that we saw in mid-April around tax time. With that, I'll turn it over to Dave Rothweiler to give some commentary a little bit further out the curve. Over to you, Dave.
Yep. Thanks so much, Dave. So on the front end, the story remains the same. All-in yields are still high, which stokes demand for fixed income, which keeps spreads more fully valued, all while being in a fairly benign credit environment. One sign of the health of the corporate credit market is the new issue space. Year-to-date, corporate new issue is on track to be about $800 billion compared to about $670 billion this time last year, or about 20% higher this year. As an example, yesterday's new issue saw 6 tranches that were anywhere from 3.6 to 5 times oversubscribed, with borrowers narrowing their concession 28 basis points from the deal's initial price target. Overall, concessions yesterday wound up being in the low to high single digits, which still show pretty healthy demand in the corporate space. After the softer CPI print today, these lower rates seem supportive of demand. The question in the front end is, where do we find value? Starting with things that we don't like, when looking at supranational agency paper, we have seen little to any value in that sector for quite some time. Starting with 3-month and 1-year agency discount notes, they actually yield less than U.S. Treasuries. Moving out to the 2-year area, agencies yield about the same as Treasuries. So for bulleted agencies and supranationals, why take the credit risk for literally no pickup versus a U.S. Treasury? You could also argue that if you own smaller agency issues or CUSIPs, you may be sacrificing liquidity if you need to sell it. Credit in the 1- to 3-month area is also very rich. Given all-in yields north of 5.25%, we do not view picking up 5 or 7 basis points as worth the credit risk for CP or other industrial corporates. For exposure in the 1 to 3 month area, we have started to allocate much more in T-bills for instant liquidity if needed. Moving out the curve, credit spreads become more favorable, with financials hitting 60 to 70 basis points over in the 3-year area. From a performance standpoint, AAA prime ABS also gives us plus 55 to 60, but in shorter maturity tenors, such as the 1 and 2 year space. In terms of credit quality, when looking at the ICE B of A 1 to 3 year corporate indices, the pickup in spreads of triple Bs versus A to triple A's is near a 3-year low at plus 30 basis points. Given this lower risk premium, we continue to favor a more up and quality approach overall. So we hope this gives you a flavor of how we look at some of the relative value opportunities on the front end. And with that, I'll pass it on to David Golo.
No, thanks, David. You know, on the investment grade corporate bond market, it really continues to kind of been a broken record for this year, but it remains on solid footing. And really, there's continued to be 3 dominant drivers supporting the sector. And one is just from a macro perspective, growth continues to remain positive and supportive for the sector. Expectations for growth in the second quarter are still coming in, you know, between 2% and 3%. You know, David Rothweiler just mentioned about supply. And even though we've seen tremendous amount of supply, the demand for investment-grade credit has been quite robust. We've easily absorbed the supply year-to-date. We're getting close to $200 billion of inflows into the asset class. We're not even through, halfway point of the year. So inflows into the asset class has been very consistent and robust, and that's really driven by the attractive all-in yields. I mean, the investment-grade strategies that we have, the 1-3, 1-5, 1-10 ladder, and then the active intermediate strategy, all right now yielding, 525 to, 535 type yields. And this is, factoring after the drop in treasury yields today. So still historically very attractive yields for investment grade buyers. And with that, we've seen the strong demand on the technical side. And then on the fundamental side, it's another solid quarter. Earnings expectations are being revised up in the second half of the year. And corporate America has continued to be able to either cut costs through various ways, and one, as we all know, through the kind of the shrinkflation, as well as raising prices, and with unemployment remaining quite low at just roughly 4% and very stable wage growth, the economy is in strong shape and remains quite robust. So fundamentals on the corporate balance sheet are quite good across all the sectors. So when you have all those three kind of going in unison for investment and credit, it really provides a very attractive backdrop and interest in the asset class. So we're seeing, and I expect that to continue going forward. I would expect, with yields where they are, we probably need to see another drop of 30 to 50 basis points in overall yields before I'd start to get a little more concerned that we might see a little more two-way flow in the asset class. But at this point, still above 5%, still a very attractive entry point. So some of the things we've been doing, we continue to be overweight the financial sector and the money center banks, as well as a few large regional banks. We still like the energy sector with oil remaining quite firm and strength in the economy. And we also have been adding more exposure in the utility sector because they've been bringing more issuance into the market as they improve their grid, increase the grid, as well as preparing for, as we know, the next decade of artificial intelligence and the demand for power, which will force the utilities to prepare for that by bringing on more resources to provide that power over the next decade. So we're going to see, we expect attractive new issue opportunities and concessions in that sector, going forward with the positions in those names. Curve-wise, we continue as we talked about earlier with rates falling. We still like the belly of the curve, that 5 to 10 year part of the curve, because the Fed, as it's coming out shortly, continues to not even crack the door on a rate hike. And it's always been, when will we cut? Maybe it's higher for longer, but eventually there'll be a cut. And that's what we'll be waiting for the dot plots and how that shapes up, in the next hour. In general, that's why we like the belly of the curve, because rates are going to fall and we want to be able to capture that yield for longer, in 2 to 3 years. So we've been adding more positions for the active intermediate, and definitely when we're rolling out the ladder, we're doing a little sooner to grab these yields before they fall further in the coming months and quarters. And then finally, from a quality perspective, we're still about low 40% for triple B's in the active intermediate strategy. We've had a little bit of an upward quality tilt, because from an excess return standpoint, credit spreads are historically toward the tight end of the range. We've traded at these levels at points in the cycle for years. So with the way all the other drivers that I mentioned earlier are very positive for credit, I would not be surprised to see us trade in the range from a credit perspective, spread credit perspective, for the near future. So for that reason, we still have a favorable opinion on some triple B exposure in various sectors, and continue to have a full allocation in the credit across the active intermediate portfolio. So with that, I'll stop and pass it over to Andres Nelson to talk about high yield.
Thanks, David. It's a similar story to investment grade. High yield continues to exhibit very low volatility, as any weakness is met with investors adding paper at these historically attractive yields, and high yield credit continues to be supported by solid fundamentals and technicals. Spreads have been fairly range bound over the last month and continue to hover near the lows at around 310 basis points, mostly driven by the performance of double B's and single B's, while the lower quality part of our market still trades fairly wide. I want to touch on primary market activity, which has been front and center this year as issuers continue to refinance front-end debt. May was the busiest month for new issues in 2.5 years, and we continue to see strong demand for new paper from investors. So most deals are well oversubscribed and print inside of initial price talk. So how much progress has been made
on the maturity wall. Since the start of the year, we've seen a 27% decrease in maturities between 2024 and 2026. And given how receptive the market's been for new issues, we expect this trend to continue, which is a positive for short duration investors as some bonds are taken out at a premium and it builds cash, which is supportive for bonds in the secondary market. So to summarize our view, we continue to prefer leaning higher in quality, and we like the shorter end of the high yield market as a way to generate high income while not taking on a lot of duration risk. I'll now hand it over to David Michael to speak on emerging markets.
Thank you, Anders. Over the last month, most market participants have been on data watch. You know, during this time, 10-year rates have ranged within 35 basis points from high to low. Emerging markets, over all this movement, has been flat in spreads. And this has led to another month of positive returns. The high all-in yields provide an attractive cushion to ride out volatility. Emerging market debt supply picked up in May, similar to high yield. Most of the supply has been in investment-grade names, while market demand has been more for high yield. This has been another month of net negative supply and continues to play into our expectations that there'll be net negative supply for the rest of the year. This is a positive technical that continues to support emerging markets. And add to the fact that over the last month, for the first time this year, emerging markets are starting to see inflows. Also, as I've been stating all year, emerging markets continue to be focused on elections. South Africa held elections on May 29th, and as I mentioned last month, ANC lost its majority. This is the first time in 30 years that ANC is not the majority, and now they're struggling to form a coalition. Their two options are to form a weak coalition or to try to rule as a minority government. In India, elections were held over the last month, with the expectation that Prime Minister Modi's BJP party would easily retain power. Opposed to what popular polls suggested, the election was much closer, and BJP needed to form a coalition to remain in power. Mexico also had elections on June 2nd. As expected, Claudia Sheinbaum and AMLO's Morena party not only won, but secured a supermajority in Congress. This unexpected supermajority led to the expectation that AMLO will push through an aggressive agenda before his term ends. And this has led to market uncertainty as there's controversial judicial reform can limit checks and balances in the government. We still expect elections, both emerging markets as well as Europe and the U.S., to create volatility this year. This volatility highlights both risks and opportunities, specifically in emerging markets. Now let me hand it over to Chuck for an update for our Muni team.
Thanks, Michael. Appreciate that. You know, by the end of May, the Muni market had suffered losses to the tune close to 2%. And thus far, for the month of June, we've actually been making up quite the amount of ground on those negative returns for the year. Thus far in June, we're up a little bit over 1%, and the expectation is, given today's performance in the fixed income markets, we'll continue to make ground and possibly actually turn around the first 4 months of negative performance in the entire month of June. So I'm encouraged that way. I would say that even in the face of tremendous supply, nearly 38% up versus last year, the muni market continues to do well. And our theory is that supply is being front-loaded as issuers attempt to avoid the fall election, and thus they're issuing their debt now to get out and seek to get reelected or look at support the national election that's taking place. Having said that, we've been encouraging investors to take advantage of the higher yields that we have today to lock in income in their ladder portfolio, and also to take advantage of the diversity of offerings and the abundance of offerings for really a relative value play. Because it's our belief that as the summer progresses, issuance will begin to drop off and investors will find it harder and harder to source securities for their portfolios at the right price. I would just point to a day like today where we see a tremendous taxable market move because of the data that came out with no supply today. We're seeing dealers mark up their offerings to the point where You don't want to transact in this market. You'd rather let it settle down before you do much of anything. Our overall strategy in the intermediate portfolio remains holding a barbell strategy where we've been literally selling out of URDNs in favor of 1, 2, and 3 year securities because the muni curve remains inverted. And we're balancing out those holdings versus longer holdings, say out to 14 to 15 years to give us the duration target that we're looking for. I don't expect that strategy to change at any point soon. And if anything, what we're doing is trading in portfolios to get them fully invested, given, as I spoke earlier, the large supply that we expect to disappear. And then also it's duration management because such a large portion of the muni market, municipal securities are callable. We find it necessary to trade within portfolios just to maintain the duration targets that we have in place. I do look for the month of June to get quieter and quieter, and I'm certainly hopeful that the positive performance that we've experienced thus far will continue and carry us to the positive year-to-date performance. With that, Steve, I will turn it back to you.
Going to just thank everyone for their views and contribution to today's Around the Horn. Thanks again for your time, and until next time, thank you.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.